I'm Jim Logan from the Memphis Fire Department.
And what are we going to talk about?
And we're going to talk about quality management today.
Cool.
Yeah. So basically, quality improvement or quality management was mandated by my state, the state of Tennessee, back in 1992. Mm-hmm. Little direction was given for that, little guidance by the state. They put out a template about, you know, how you're supposed to do it, you know, check boxes and things like that. It was driven by the directors, the medical directors of each service. Mm-hmm. However, medical directors, you know, there wasn't really any guidance for what a, you know, any physician could be a medical director. So it was really just kind of left that up to each service to how they did their quality management. But it had to be done. It was checked by the state every year in their quality assurance program to make sure that folks were doing it. The focus for our department, the Memphis Fire Department, was back in 92 was basically, did you check all the boxes on your patient care report, you know, so you could generate funds, generate money. It really wasn't a clinically based, you know, are you competent in your skills? Are you competent in your care delivery? So there wasn't really a lot to patient care as far as quality goes. And it was also viewed as a lot of quality programs are, as, you know, Big Brother watching. Mm-hmm. And when the folks from that were assigned to the quality improvement or quality assurance, as it was called then, when they called you, you were in trouble. So it was a bad connotation to be called, you know, by them. It was, you know. You know, the providers felt they were getting hit over the head, you know, every time they turned around. It focused on assurance, but not improvement. We assured that you check the boxes correctly, but there wasn't an improvement module to it. More like a, you know, almost like a Fruit of the Loom underwear inspector. You know, right. This one's got the right seam in it, and we're not going to throw it away. And, right. You know, we go through it like that. So it was basically based on billing. And that was back in the 90s until about 2005. Mm. That's how we operated.
Wow.
So a culture was developed that was just horrible as far as quality. I mean, you can't improve something when your 1,900 of your employees think that it's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. It's a way to try to change that culture. So this just has a couple of the forms that were done. So you can see how, you know, if one of your supervisors came to you and showed you this form and made you sign it and said these are the bad things you have to do, and I'm not going to tell you how to correct it, but this goes in your file, and we got you on record as not participating correctly. So little attention was given to quality or patient care. System issues weren't even looked at as a quality issue, which are most of your clinical issues can be tied back to processes and system issues, and that's the way we always worked, and that's the way we always you know, had things done. You know, so for how did we get from you know, that to where we're at now? We were looked at as the quality police. I mean, it was almost like the ambulance police was after you when you got one of these forms, and it was we had to bring EMS back to the forefront of our department. Our department, you know, I guess the national average, everybody throws out the number 80% of what fire-based EMS does is EMS. Our fire departments do our is EMS. Technically, right now ours is 78% of what we do.
Sure.
So we had to rebuild our system, our EMS system, from the ground up, and we had to get a commitment to EMS by the department in restructuring this EMS system.
There something that was the catalyst?
Yeah, it was back when the 80-20 rule with the FSLA, you had to do the 80-20 rule where you had to do the firefighting versus the EMS, and so we had to all be cross-trained as firefighters. So initially we were all quote-unquote civilians within a fire department system. So we were the same, but we were separate, if you will. Federal Labor Standards Act lawsuit that we filed made or forced the department to make us one, to make us cross-train. At that point, we went to from a system that had two paramedics on each ambulance to a system that had one paramedic and one EMT, and that EMT came from the fire suppression side.
Sure.
So before it was that me and you are paramedics and we're going out and we're making calls and the fire guys sit at the station.
Right.
And they may make first responder calls or they may not. This is before EMD, emergency medical dispatch and all that stuff. So I think the only calls they would make back then would be cardiac arrest if we called them. So now it was a process where they were having to become involved. So resources had to be allocated for rank structure. We had to hire more paramedics. We put in ALS first response companies. Right now we have 45 ALS first responder companies that roll out with us every day. One very important thing we had to have was an active medical director. A lot of medical directors are what I'd like to call just, you know, they just sign your national registry or whatever your state requires you to have to maintain your license, and you wouldn't know the guy if he came up and punched you in the nose and on the street. And we had a couple of those. They were inactive. They didn't push quality patient care. It was just something that they did. So we had to reach out and get a medical director that that would stand behind the medics, help with the training, and be involved in every facet of the EMS program within the fire department. We also had to have some dedicated staff for quality improvement measures to try to make the system better, try to change that culture. And we've got four of those. There's three other people that work with me in that department. Of course, we had to develop a strategic plan on how we were going to change this. And that was difficult. We focused on the clinical performance now instead of the billing elements. So we went through some leadership changes as well as this all went on. We had a new, what most people call a fire chief, come in, Richard Arwood, who saw that this was just the EMS system was in a shambles. Because as this happened, you had... when we went through the lawsuit, the retaliation was that we lost all of our EMS field supervisors.
Now, which lawsuit was this?
This was back in the Fair Labor Standards Act lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah, the 80-20 thing. So we filed that. We got a little money in our pocket, and you know everybody was happy. And then that happiness went away because they just stripped us down to nothing.
Right.
And so we had people or supervisors that were looking out for new hires and people that were already on that were fire suppression officers that knew nothing really about EMS or how EMS really ran because they hadn't been involved in it.
Right.
And so now we're rebuilding. We had to go to a rebuilding phase, and this fire chief saw that we needed to do that. We had to rebuild our EMS education, which was basically non-existent. So we've gone from doing, at that point, back in 2005, we weren't even doing our own continuing education. We had to go out and seek it ourselves. So we've gone from that to present day. We've just been accredited as we have our own paramedic program now.
Great.
So we teach both EMTs and paramedics.
And is that a statewide program? Or?
No, this is just for Memphis
just
Fire.
Just Memphis
Department.
Fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're the only non-educational institution that teaches paramedics within our state. So we've come a long way.
Sure.
We had to fight real hard to get that.
What was the budgetary?
it's costly, but to get the quality that we want, because we weren't getting the quality student or fire recruit or paramedic through the local community colleges.
Right.
And so this way we can take our time and we can mentor them and we can educate them at our own pace.
Mm-hmm.
And not Not to say that those institutions were bad, but we go through a selection process.
Sure.
It used to be back in the day that if you had a pulse and you had a card, come on in, and you know what you get with that. And so now we're a little more selective, and we can educate our own folks. But budgetarily, it takes we have a training staff now just for our EMS division of 14, just to teach the EMT and paramedic program. Mm-hmm.
Was the city supportive of kind of the shift in the department and kind of what needed to happen in order to improve?
Yeah, well, actually, Chief Richard Arwood, the one that saw that this was in trouble, reached out to a consulting firm, and they did a report and study, and that was brought before our city mothers and fathers, and mm-hmm. and they said, "Wow, we had no idea."
Right, mm-hmm. And so that was good to help them get behind.
Absolutely. So there was a study that was done and that was reported upon with the Health and Safety Committee with the city. We reached out to Gary Ludwig, mm-hmm. and he accepted the offer to come work with us at the fire department, and we just started the whole restructuring of EMS from the ground up, and of course, he had some ties within the EMS community across the nation, and we were at a point to where we were one of our strategic plans was to enhance our quality management. Try to turn it around, try to turn the culture around. We had Mike Tagman come in and take a good hard look at what we were doing, gave us some suggestions on how to improve, some things to look at, things to do, and kind of gave us a template and kind of a guide on how to expand on those things.
Was it hard to get the guys in the department to deal with the new way of doing things?
Well, 4 years later, I think we're there. Yeah,
that's
but
good.
It's taken. It's like the Titanic. No, let's not use the Titanic. it's like a large ocean liner.
Right, just trying to steer a big
ship.
It
is just to turn it. Mm-hmm. It just takes time.
Right.
And we had to just redevelop a culture, and in that process with restructuring of EMS, we got some new blood in there. Mm-hmm. We hired some new people, a lot of folks from Ohio, Michigan. We even had folks from Alaska come in, and so that made a difference too. So we had folks that were already there that already had the culture, and then you had new people coming in, and it was difficult, but it was a good thing. We're up to 400 paramedics now, a little over 400 paramedics, and a little over 1,000 EMTs that work with us. And so that's when you're dealing with a smaller department, it may be a little easier to change culture.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen overnight in
right.
any situation, but with a large department, it takes time.
Right.
So they're coming around. They don't run every time we give them a phone call or something like that. So we redesigned a lot of our evaluation forms. And this is back when we were paper. We've since gone paperless now, and so we're in the middle of tweaking some system issues and getting our patient care reports kind of in line and things like that. But with that restructuring came a new. Supervisor, are we going long?
No, this is fine.
Okay. New supervisors. We had a testing for EMS lieutenant and EMS chief. So we had all that structure come in. So quality, these officers, you had to have so many years on. So all of the folks that were promoted were familiar with the old quality assurance. The whack-a-mole program. You just, how you at mm-hmm. the fair, you get
yep.
you play that game and you hit them
yep.
over the head when they pop up, when the problem popped up. And that's how we dealt with things,
sure.
Which was absolutely wrong and goes against everything that's ever taught about quality management.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a punitive, it should not be a punitive tool. Now we don't use it that way. However, so we got a new medical director, we got a new chief, we got new EMS officers. And so where do you go from there? A lot, you know, we have a team of four of us that manage the quality department. So we would have quality meetings. We would generate data on clinical issues, tests like for instance, aspirin for cardiac emergencies. Mm-hmm. You know, the aspirin compliance, giving a patient the correct dose of aspirin in a cardiac chest pain was 10%. Mm-hmm. You know, so we bring that data to the table and we go, you know, shift X, you know, right. your compliance numbers are this. And this is me and three other people from the quality department. And nobody, the medical director's not there, the chief's not there. So they're thinking, well, this is just Jim talking, and they'll blow you off. Mm-hmm. And so we improved a little bit, but not much. Our numbers went up a little bit as far as patient care and the clinical aspect of things. And so there was little ownership through the field supervisors or the field officers. They mm-hmm. felt that it was a quality division problem. It wasn't sure. their problem, so nothing was tied together. It was more of a us versus them type thing. They were paralyzed to move forward. We had asked our chiefs and Chief Ludwig and the medical director to sit in on some of these meetings, and we ran them. Mm-hmm. The quality folks ran them, but it wasn't what it needed to be. So they were paralyzed to buy into the whole QI thing, the quality improvement, quality management piece of it, because of how it was viewed.
Right. So how'd you fix it?
How'd we fix it? Well, we called Mike Tagman back, and we said, we're stuck. You know, could you come out and take a look at what we're doing? So we've changed all our forms. We've got a quality plan put in place. We've got meetings going on with our EMS officers. So we could continue doing the same things and achieve the same results, mm-hmm. which wasn't working. We can try to do things better, or we could try to do new things, and that's kind of where Mike came in. You know, he basically said we did, it's a quote from him, is that we had done 10 years worth of work in 2 years' time, trying to turn this ship around. But we were stuck. We were stagnant mm-hmm. in what we were doing. And that's all part of the journey too in quality, is you get to a certain plateau and it, you know, you have to try something else right. and reanalyze and see where you need to be. And we said, you know, can you reach out to North Carolina? Can you reach out to somebody in Oklahoma? Can you reach out to somebody in San Francisco? Where can we get some new ideas on how to do things? And he says, you know, sometimes the treasure's in your own backyard. And he just paused, and we were like, what in the heck is this guy talking about? He says, I got some friends at FedEx that would love to help you guys out.
Wow.
So that was, it wasn't wow, it was duh. Because, you know, I mean, we should have known that. It
right.
was just something so simple. And these guys were more than willing to help us. So Mike hooked us up with Federal Express. And, of course, you know, they're a Malcolm Baldridge National Quality Award winner. And part of their having that award or having that status is they have to do some type of community service or community work related to quality management. Mm-hmm. And they've been over backwards to tell us how, you know, they really just let us know how they could help us. And their first meeting is, you know, we've been there. Mm-hmm. We did the same thing.
Right.
And so, you know, they led their meetings. They threw their numbers up, you know, their productivity numbers up on the screen. And the managers just sit there and went, yeah, those numbers really suck. We're not doing too good. You know, we'll see you at the next meeting. You know,
right.
and that was it. So they would leave and nothing would really get better. So what they decided to do was they went to their CEOs and their vice presidents and says, you know, this is not working. Kind of like where we were. This it's worked a little bit, but it's not totally where it needs to be. What we need you to do, Mr. CEO, and what we need you to do, Mr. Vice President, you need to lead the meeting. You need to be sitting at the head of the meeting. We'll facilitate. Mm-hmm. You know, we will drive the machine. We will give you the data that you need to ask your people
right.
under you what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your issues? And, oh, by the way, when we meet again, we're not just going to discuss numbers again. We're going to talk about those numbers that you left here saying were bad and what your solutions will be
right, how
to fix it. So that's the model that we use. And with that, we've had compliance with our, you know, with patient care. It's gotten better. We have our medical director sitting at the head of the table. We have our division chief, and we have Gary Ludwig sitting at the head of the table, looking at these numbers with middle management,
mm-hmm.
and saying, you know, it is what it is. You know, why do you think we've got those issues? Go out and find me some solutions and come back, and we'll
right.
tweak it and we'll fix it.
When was it that you met with FedEx and kind of had that?
This was about a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've seen a definite improvement?
Oh, absolutely. A definite change in culture as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is because when you sit across the table from a peer,
mm-hmm.
Jim Logan, as officer to officer, that we're equal, it doesn't mean much.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a peer review. Now, when you sit across the table from a doctor, who is very active in your service, very well respected, and then you sit across the table from the CEO, if you will, the chief of the department,
mm-hmm.
who's telling you, you know, we have a problem and I need you to help me fix it. It gives a whole new meaning to quality. And it's worked out really well.
Great.
Yeah. So management now leads the meetings. We facilitate it. We script it out.
Mm-hmm.
We let them know what we need to talk about. We have a pre-meeting before we go in, and so it's not us talking.
Right.
It's leadership talking. So they have our EMS field officers have ownership of quality. They go out and they find solutions to the problem. They help us with our education. We tie our findings in with our education department.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a trifecta. You quality. We find out what the issues are. We bring them to the leadership. Leadership filters it down to the officers to find solutions, and then some of the solutions, and most of those solutions are either one, an educational piece, or two, a system issue that's
mm-hmm.
made it difficult for the medic to function properly.
Right.
Because you have outliers, but for the most part, we got good people.
You have good people.
Yeah.
They just need to
yeah.
be given the right tools
mm-hmm.
to
do the right
well.
Job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now you're here at Expo and trying to kind of spread the model around and help other departments
pretty much
out?
Yeah, because you know, I mean, it's a lot of services use a quality program, but I was talking to a guy last night, and he said, yeah, when my captain calls, it's like, holy crap, you know, he wants to talk to me about a quality issue, and it's seen as a negative
mm-hmm.
A negative thing, and it's not. It's what our quality management program is about. Is about helping the provider,
mm-hmm.
Improving our system, therefore improving patient care.
Right.
And so I think now it's being seen that way through the eyes of the field and the EMTs and the paramedics as well.
Great.
Have I rambled enough for you?
Did you cover everything you needed?
Yeah. I mean, we look at things like, you know, clinical issues like cardiac arrest, you know, STEMIs. We look at all CPAP that's used. We look at all insertions of IOs. We've just started hypothermia, so we're looking mm-hmm. at those clinical indicators. But there's also what we're trying to focus on this year is mostly our system issues.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mentioned before, we've gone from paper to electronic.
Right.
That's been a huge thing for a large department like ours. We've also improved our EMS outreach. You know, before when our system was, you know, floundering, if you will, we didn't control our own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And now We control how we provide care. We don't let the hospital administrators, you know, well, you need to have an IV if you come in here, and there needs to be an 18-gauge, and you need to have two vials of blood. And
right.
No. Here's how we're going to operate.
Right.
This is our pre-hospital. And so we have a better outreach. So it's not just about clinical issues anymore. It's about relationship building and linkages as being a partner in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
So we've done our outreach programs for that. So we've developed programs for internal and external customers. We've started our own mentoring program. So our new employees just don't get thrown on a truck when they come to work, right? We put them with an experienced person. And we go through a scripted manual education at least three hours every day where they're riding with an experienced paramedic that has been handpicked and selected, and they've been put together with that person to help them make it through the tough times, because there's a lot of things, you know, within systems that aren't written down. There's memos, and there's SOPs and things like that. But
right.
You know, where do you get fuel? How do you order medicine?
Mm-hmm.
How do you do this? How do you do that? What in your normal daily activity? So we've broken every piece of that down into, you know. And before, it may be you may have found out how to do something, but you may have found out the hard way.
Right.
So basically what we're looking at now, and you know, I mentioned before we've started our own paramedic program. That's Dr. Holly there. I know you guys can't see it, but you know, he actually is so hands-on that when these new paramedics go through school and they do their final clinical checkoffs,
mm-hmm.
he's right there. He's the guy checking them off.
Sure.
So that's the cool part about that.
That's cool.
But our next piece of the journey is going to be really about processes,
mm-hmm.
how things are done, about system improvements, and using Six Sigma as a model for our quality program. So that's kind of where we're going.
Which is a good idea to apply. Six Sigma isn't only about corporate.
Well, and that's the fallacy. Everybody looks at Six Sigma and they start reading about it and go, how am I going to get 99.99966%, free of defects
mm-hmm.
in EMS? How are we going to do that? Well, it's not about that. Actually, what it really is a lot of what we're doing already. You have the CEO, you have your leadership sitting at the table, because there's a difference between having them involved and saying, do you support this?
Right.
Because they can, you know, lip service is, you know, you can get that all day long, but
mm-hmm.
when they're sitting at the table, it's different. Basically, with the Six Sigma, it's structured on a timeline. You have benchmarks, you have priorities, and you bite it off one piece at a time.
Sure.
You know, taking logistics just as an example, medical logistics is huge. But it may be the distribution of those logistics that you need to worry about, or
mm-hmm.
it needs to be a priority. So it's a lot about project teams, and having a team that has a contract that is responsible
mm-hmm.
and that is accountable to the chief and to the medical director to bring back in a timely manner a completed project.
Mm-hmm.
And with that completed project, you usually have a return on your investment. Either you get your time, you get time back
mm-hmm.
With improving a process, or you save money.
Right.
And so that's what the manufacturing industry was about in the mistake thing.
Mm-hmm.
And ours is more of a service-oriented issue, and by improving those processes, you improve patient care.
Sure.
So.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from emsresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.